Back at it for you on Tuesday, July 21st, another busy edition of Connecticut Today. Republican State Rep. Tom O'Day joined us in the 3 o'clock hour. Tom represents parts of New Canaan and Wilton. He also sits on the General Assembly's Judiciary Committee, and he gave us his thoughts on the progress of a police reform bill in the state. An update on the saga behind the Christopher Columbus statue in Bridgeport. Former Bridgeport State Rep. Chris Caruso joined us in the 4 o'clock hour. And in the 5 o'clock hour, just past 5:30, Republican State Senator George Logan of Ansonia gave us an update on the State Bond Commission and how there has still not been any money bonded for the Valley Fire Training School. Calls on hold for just a moment. We're going to try and figure out now what the deal is. Where do we stand on that police accountability bill, however it's termed, a bill to kind of reboot policing here or to add some accountability to it? State Rep. Tom O'Day joins us. Tom representing District 125 on the Republican side, New Canaan and Wilton. Tom, hi. Paul here at WICC. How are you?
Good, Paul. How are you doing? Pleasure to be with you.
I'm all right. Getting along. Well, Tom, you sit on the Judiciary Committee, and I guess in lieu of a real public hearing or public hearings we can have, they're calling these, you know, listening sessions, listening days. We had that on Friday. So now the process, Tom, has moved along a little bit. Give me your thoughts overall, Tom, as to what you heard from people, what your committee members heard on Friday, and where you think we are, Tom, in this whole thing.
So we had the listening hearing, if you will, on Friday, like you said, and it went from about 10 a.m. to about 10 p.m. And we heard from a very diverse group. It was a lot of good input. The biggest issue I think facing the committee and in looking at the bill is the effect it will have if we eliminate what's called qualified immunity for police officers. Now, it sounds complicated. Frankly, it was created by the Supreme Court in a decision in 1967, basically giving government officials immunity if they don't violate a clearly established right at the time. It's evolved to be put in place now with a lot of police use of force cases.
Tom, essentially allows, tell me if I'm wrong here, but this allows cops to be cops except in egregious or law-breaking circumstances, right? Is that basically what this allows here?
Yes, correct. Right now, if a police officer violates your rights, your clearly established rights, right, from excessive force, for example, what happened to George Floyd or Tony Timpa in Dallas, where an officer puts his knee on somebody's neck and chokes them to death, that is a clear violation. They can be sued. Where it gives police discretion to do their job without fear of lawsuits. And frankly, if this passes with qualified immunity being removed, you're going to have police officers not actively policing because they're not going to want to be facing lawsuit at every turn.
So basically, Tom, somebody could say, hey, well, wait a minute. I didn't like the way you handled me there, or you gave me a little pain when you put those cuffs on me, or something, Tom, that would be normal police procedure would now be actionable in court. Is that the main worry here?
Yes, that's the main worry, that if a police officer is actively engaged in a domestic violence dispute, for example. Typically it's the man that's the physical doing the physical nature of the altercation. The police will want to subdue that person and get everybody safe in the situation. Yeah. If they get rid of qualified immunity and they're said, well, you know, you're going to be sued if you use too much force than reasonable. you know, what is reasonable? Well, what the courts look at to give you qualified immunity, that if an objective police officer would believe that that's reasonable, then you have immunity. If you eliminate that, you know, the police are going to be concerned about liability. And here there's this discussion in this bill that would require police officers to get their own insurance, potentially. They're going to look into it.
Yeah, I know, Tom. I know, Tom, there was another state. Is it Colorado or some other state that actually has cops get their liability insurance or allows people to get a certain amount of settlement from a police officer? Did I read that right?
So my understanding is Colorado was the first state that eliminated qualified immunity and has up to $25,000 the police officer has to get his own insurance for it. That's my understanding. I have not looked at the Colorado bill in great detail, but yes, the Colorado is the state that, so far as I know, is the only state that's eliminated qualified immunity.
State Rep Tom O'Day joins us, General Assembly District 125, Republican New Canaan and Wilton. Tom sits on the Judiciary Committee. Tom, a couple of more things. Let's hit on consent searches. Obviously, when an officer pulls over a car and says, hey, how you doing? Your taillights out, whatever, your headlights out, and asks Tom for some sort, absent of a clear... what, odor of marijuana, clear sight of a gun, asks for consent on the spot to search the vehicle. Now, there's an aspect in the bill that would get rid of that, correct?
Yeah, so, and that consent search has been very successful in Connecticut. You know, the I-95 transportation of drugs is obviously a problem. And it's been very successful in if you consent to search a vehicle, they search and they find contraband, you can be arrested for that contraband. What this bill does is, you're exactly right, this bill would eliminate, even if they consent to search, the officer can't search without probable cause that there's a crime has been committed. So we've been in negotiations trying to say reasonable suspicion instead of probable cause, but it looks like that part of the bill is going to stay in. And so that even if a police officer has consent to search a vehicle, they're not going to be allowed to search it without probable cause that some other criminal activity is going on.
So if that stays in, then, Tom, and correct me if I'm wrong, but what you just said is, okay, so an officer can pull somebody over for a blown out headlight, a broken taillight, but then they would be, Tom, if I'm getting this right, prohibited from asking for a search unless they see something upon looking in that car that adds further suspicion. In other words, there is a chance, as you say, contraband could be hidden well enough that they wouldn't be able to even look for it.
That's correct. That's absolutely correct. They would not, even with consent, they would not be able to look at the vehicle unless there was probable cause that some other crime was committed. And so the consent searches would be done away with. And look, there are some officers that may have taken advantage of situations here, but only when they have consent. A good part of this bill is the dash cams being required, and even those departments that don't have the body cams, mm-hmm, would be required to get them. And I was originally opposed to the requirement to have body cams because I thought it would limit the officer's ability to interact with communities and community policing, because they'd be on film and you'd have that, a freedom of information request for that film. But I actually was wrong. I Senator Eric Coleman was right in pushing that forward, because what the body cams have actually done is help the officers in the defense of, and it's eliminated,
sure,
a lot of false police reports.
Yeah, I mean, listen, this is what we deal with, right, Tom? That's what the officers are saying. And look, we did not abuse this guy. This guy's just looking for a payday. So that's what you're saying, is that's a positive aspect here.
Yes, that's a positive aspect of this. And now I was on the Police Officer Stands and Training Council for 10 years. That's the group that helps train police throughout the state, and we've got to let your listeners know, we probably have the most educated, trained police force in the country. we spend, it's about 32 weeks of training that each officer goes through. So we've got really good training. So, you know, we can certainly do better, but your listeners should know that I do believe, and a lot of my colleagues agree with me, we've got some of the most highly trained police officers in the country.
Tom, hang on. We'll do one more segment with you. Stay there. We'll be right back. Republican State Rep. Tom O'Day, Assembly District, General Assembly District 125, representing New Canaan and Wilton. Tom, hang on. Traffic and weather together, 316 on WICC. Hey, joins us for a few more minutes. Republican District 125 of the General Assembly, residents of New Canaan and Wilton. Represented some by Tom. He also sits on the Judiciary Committee. So, Tom, do you think there is a chance that the items here in this bill to tweak policing here in the state that have broad support on both sides, might a standalone bill pass with many things and then other contentious issues, Tom, be parsed out maybe to a second session or after the November elections? You know, I guess it's what the Democrats want here, but what are your thoughts on that?
So, yes, Paul, that's my hope. Look, my, you know, generally in my 8 years as a legislator, our best bills are bipartisan. And I'm hopeful that we can take this qualified immunity piece, which is Section 41 of the bill, and put it into a task force to take a look at how you know, this can be addressed. I will tell you, Congress should have. This was the reason why Justice Thomas and Justice Sotomayor agree that qualified immunity needs to be addressed, even though they're on opposite political spectrums, is because this was created by the courts in the 60s, and Congress hasn't acted on it. So, you know, Congress should act on qualified immunity and legislate it, but they're not. And I don't think it's a good thing to have states doing this independently, and it's certainly tying police officers' hands. And it's going to affect our poor communities more, our cities more, because what's happening in Chicago, I think, would be happening in our cities if the police can't actively police because of fear of lawsuits.
And also,
I'm hopeful that we'll be compromised.
Yeah, and also, Tom, we have the scenario here. I know there's some contention on use of force provisions, how that would be reviewed, and also the installation of an individual who would look at police-involved shootings. What did you hear in those 12 hours or so of testimony last Friday, particularly from people in law enforcement and connected to law enforcement, on issues like the use of force and then the investigation in the state in this bill of police-involved shootings?
So, yes, there was a lot of testimony from officers asking us not to impede their ability to police, actively police. I would say the investigation of shootings is a good thing, and having the AG's office or state's attorney's office have somebody specially assigned to do that, and having a report every year on the use of force. I did a course on the use of force at the academy. I taught one, and so taking a look at that is a good thing, not a bad thing. We just need to be careful about tying the police officer's hands by having them constantly having to look over their back. And that's what they were most concerned about. We heard from minority officers. We heard from the chief in Waterbury. We heard from the chief in Danbury. And they're concerned that if this bill passes with the qualified immunity piece taken out or limited, that it's going to have a poor effect on their ability to do active policing.
Tom, final question. What are you thinking as far as a timetable for a vote, at least on some of this? Are we looking at later on this week, next week? I know that's what's been floated. Are you hearing anything? What's your feeling on that?
Yes, yeah, so we've been called in for special session on Thursday. So the House is going in at 11 a.m. on Thursday. And now I encourage your listeners who have a concern about this, you can reach out to your state rep, let them, your feelings be known that, that Section 41, have that put in a task force to look at it. There's a police rally in support of our police officers at 10 o'clock at the Capitol on Thursday morning. So I would encourage your listeners to go to that, reach out to their legislators and about their concerns about the Section 41 limiting police officers' ability to actively police. And, you know, if that, if this piece comes out, I think there's a lot of good parts of this bill that could be bipartisan. And so I'm hopeful that that our voice will be heard.
Tom, thank you. Appreciate it. We'll talk down the road sooner than later. Tom O'Day, state rep, Republican side, Assembly District 125, portions of New Canaan and Wilton. Tom, be good, and we'll talk to you down the line. We appreciate it.
Thank you very much, Paul. Take care.
Appreciate it. Welcome to, this week's initial chapter of Where's Christopher Columbus? And to tell us where Chris Columbus is and other Chris Caruso joins us, former Bridgeport state rep, back with us. Chris, how are you?
Good afternoon, Paul. How are you doing today?
I'm getting by, Chris. It's all good. Life is good. Were we supposed to have a council meeting about Mr. Columbus last night? Did that happen? And if not, why?
Well, the city council, when they put the resolution in to restore the Columbus statue in Seaside Park in Bridgeport, they had asked the mayor to set the date of last night at 6 o'clock, and they spoke to the mayor, and the mayor refuses to call a special meeting of the council, which under the charter, the city charter, he must call a meeting once it's asked by three or more members of the city council. So he's refused. He wants to send the entire issue to the park board in the city, who he sidestepped entirely when he decided to take the statue down. So I think right now he's just trying to pass the potato, and you know, where it lands, he doesn't really care. So the council is preparing the first meeting in August, which I think is the first Tuesday of the month or Monday of the month. They'll bring the resolution up to take action on it.
Okay, so they can take action on it still, Chris. They just have to wait, as I guess, for a regular meeting, correct?
That's correct, and that's one of the shortcomings in the charter, that the mayor presides over the council meetings, and any special or emergency meeting, he would have to approve and call the meeting. So he would have to say, yeah, there's a meeting, it's going to be on this date. He refuses to do that. So there's a lot of things going on right now, but I think the long and short of it at this point, the first Monday in August, the council will be formally meeting, and then they'll take action on the resolution at that time.
All right. So, Chris, what happens? Let's say the council has to wait until the first meeting of August, and it happens, and the council decides put the statue back. I mean, can they make it that simple? And if it can be that simple, Chris, then what happens?
Well, if the statue is put back up, part of the resolution calls for the continuance of the dialogue that began with myself and two other leaders of the Italian-American community and five city council members. So the dialogue would continue. And then the table would be widened, though, so we'd bring more people to the table, you know, from the community, probably representatives from the protesters, to hopefully come to a meaningful resolution. If that all fails under the charter, the park board in the city of Bridgeport has jurisdiction over the parks. They're responsible for maintaining the parks, jurisdiction over any statues or structures that are in the park. So at very least, it would then go to the park board if an agreement couldn't be reached. And then there would be a formal process to remove the statue. We felt that all along, but when the mayor pulled the rug from the negotiations and took the statue down, all of that unfortunately stopped. And I think that's what angers the Italian-American community. In good faith, we were invited to a meeting to participate. We stepped forward to do that. The mayor knew about it. I had spoken to the mayor personally about it and his chief of staff, And then the mayor decided just to take the statue down without even letting us know, the park board know. Back on August 14th, it's interesting, the mayor tried to move the issue back into the park board, and the park board said, no, you know, you created the mess, now you, it's yours. And so it's back in his lap at this point, but interesting enough, he's uninterested in dealing with it. You know, he doesn't want to put the statue back, and he's putting it on the council. The council, in turn, on the, you know, first Monday in August at their formal meeting, they'll take action. And there's 14 councilmen, so they have a supermajority of the council.
Is there a possibility, Chris, that this could come to a loggerhead here even more than it is now, and all proper procedure will have been followed, okay, as you laid out, but for some reason the statue would not be put back? Is that possible?
Anything is possible at this point, Paul. This past weekend, I went around to various Italian organizations, and I was meeting with their leadership, and they're all unanimous that they want the statue returned. They want the negotiations to continue. And they're emphatic about that. I was, you know, you always have difference of opinion in any group, but there was solid support for returning the statue. And we're going to fight it. As a matter of fact, the words such as firewall came up, you know, that throughout the state of Connecticut, statues are coming down. And we want to fight to keep the statue up. And so if we need to be that firewall here in Connecticut, we're willing to do it. So, you know, we're ready to continue the fight to keep the statue up. And you know, we're hoping that it can be resolved. But at this point, unfortunately, the mayor has, in my opinion, become the new Pontius Pilate of Bridgeport, you know, where he's washing his hands of the deed and then pretending that it's not his job, when in fact it is his job. At very least, he should be trying to encourage discussion and dialogue to come to a meaningful resolution. But, you know, I think he takes the part of a lot of politicians in this state. They're all, you know, quick to take the statue down under supposed threats. So they take it down and then they say, well, we'll talk later. It just doesn't work that way. You know, the Italian community is very offended, and they're angry, they're hurt, and they just don't feel it's right. And I think what bothers them the most, Paul, is the process. You know, we were discussing it. We were trying to work out an agreement. We had an agreement, as a matter of fact. When we left the meeting with the five city councilmen, we had an absolute agreement. We signed off on it. We were going to get it to the press. We asked the mayor to join in to support it. I was meeting with the council president to get her to sign on as well. And then all of a sudden, unbeknownst to all of us, the mayor just pulled the rug and took the statue down. And it seems typical of what's happening across the state. You know, politicians are pandering and trying to work through issues by taking the statue down. And frankly, in the city, saying, in my opinion, to hell with the Italian community. You know, if the Italian community gets upset, that's okay. And, you know, we're going to do what we want. And, you know, in particular, the statue in Bridgeport, we paid for that. That's our statue. It took us 40 years to raise the money, and then in 65 it was erected down at Seaside Park. The city agreed to maintain that statue, and frankly, when they took it down, they breached that agreement, you know, that we had, you know, for many years with the city. And, you know, what's fascinating, Paul, this whole Columbus controversy, the statue's been sitting down there for well over 50 years, and there's never been a hue and cry like there is now.
Yeah,
you know, people have walked by that statue. I would venture to say that if we took a poll of the people of Bridgeport, probably more than a majority wouldn't even know the statue's down there. So, you know, it wasn't bothering anyone. It was up there. It was a recognition of the Italian-American community. And now, because of the hue and cry out there, oh, it has to come down, and this is the reason, and here, you know, all of this back and forth, you know, the mayors are just quick to respond, quick to do it.
Yeah, and it's sad, Chris, that it has come to that under the threat of violence. You're right. Discussion is one thing. Give and take as to what to do with statues, whether to move them, take them down, or put something up with it for better historical context. That's one thing, but to have to do this under threat of violence is not good. Chris Caruso, Chris, thank you as always. And so we'll look at early next month to see what happens here one way or the other. Chris, thank you. We appreciate it.
Have a good day, Paul.
You too, Chris. With a project in and of itself that's not controversial, but maybe why it hasn't gotten funded is our old buddy, Republican State Senator George Logan of Ansonia. George, how are you?
Doing great, Paul. How are you and all your listeners doing out there?
We're all right, George. We're hanging in. Maybe there's some light at the end of the tunnel. George, the Valley Fire Training School, the Fire Training Academy there in the Valley, did the money come in for that or not?
Absolutely not. Once again, we got the shaft. Another broken promise from Governor Lamont that I'm very disappointed in his action again. You know, as everyone knows, Governor Lamont, a week before the election, he vowed that under his watch, the Valley Fire Training School was going to happen, was going to get built. You know, here it is now, more than halfway through his term. And nothing. He keeps turning his back on the Valley Training School, Fire Training School. And this is something that we need for the safety and well-being of our families, of our businesses here in the Valley, and of our first responders, of our firefighters. You know, they need to be able to be properly trained, and they need to be able to do it locally. You know, before the governor's election, it was a real tight race. You know, in the end, he ended up winning by just a little over, I think it's over 10,000 votes. And he came in just a few days before the election promising that Valley Fire Training School. And I'm telling you, he came in, he sounded like a straight shooter, and I'm sure he got thousands of votes towards that win. And now that he's in office, unfortunately, you know, he has not come through on this major, major promise. You know, so I'm just, you know, hopeful that as many people let him know our dissatisfaction with him not releasing the funds, because remember, it's already been approved, right? It's been approved by the legislature. It's now up to Governor Lamont to put it on the agenda of a bond commission meeting, and that's what we're waiting on.
George, is this political payback? I know maybe a tough question, but could this be political payback, as has been rumored, because of Republican opposition from some legislators in the Valley area to tolls?
Well, you know, I don't get into rumor and innuendo, right? But I do look at actions. And the actions are that the governor indicated that if he got elected, that he would certainly make sure that that Valley Fire Training School was built. It hasn't happened yet. I think we have to keep putting pressure on him and letting him know, hey, look, we, the legislature, you know, we did our job, right? We got it through the legislature. It's there. He just needs to put it on the agenda. He needs to make sure that it gets done. You know, we have, you know, that, and also the transportation with the rail lines as well is another one that we desperately need here in the Valley. And we expect the governor to come through on that, because we need it, and we need his leadership to actually make it happen. So I'm going to continue waving the flag and the charge, and trying to make sure that, hey, governor, the legislature did its part. Now we need you to follow through on what you promised to do.
George, these fire training academies are so vital. And, you know, we've had guests on from the local volunteer firefighters before on this show from the Valley. And, George, a lot of people don't understand, because they see big city departments like Bridgeport and New Haven and Hartford. I didn't think the percentage was that high. But one of our coworkers here at WICC is a Valley volunteer firefighter, and he told us several times 70% of Connecticut's firefighters, George, are volunteers.
That's right.
You know, a reason why we need academies like this, and I don't think people realize that, George.
That's exactly right. And when you have volunteer firefighters, now what we have to do now in the Valley is that our volunteers have to travel to other parts of the state to obtain the training. And what does that do? It makes it difficult for recruiting. It makes it difficult to bring in newer, younger cadets, folks to come in here to be firefighters, to volunteer, because it becomes such a hassle. It's such a pain. And, you know, there's a lot of extra expense involved and having to go to far, you know, reaches of our state, you know, with groups of volunteers to make sure they stay up with their training and the proper certifications that they need to be able to do their jobs effectively. And it's just having a very a negative effect on the safety of the people here in the valley. And it's time that, you know, we are not, you know, put in some sort of marginalized back burner, mm-hmm. second class. You know, we deserve. We're paying taxes like anybody else in the rest of this state. We deserve to get the type of treatment that when a government official, particularly the governor, the chief elected official of the state of Connecticut, says that that Valley Fire Training School Academy is a priority, that he follows through on it. That's all we're asking. We're not asking him to do something beyond what he promised to do a week before he was elected.
George, thank you. We appreciate the time. Stay good, and we'll be in touch, my friend. Thank you.
Sounds great. Have a good one, everyone.
Thanks. Republican State Senator George Logan.